All right, the mic is yours, Lynn.
Thank you so much, Regina Dawn Akers, and wonderful music. And right now I have Jerry Dombowski and Diane Cirincione on the phone, and I'm going to switch the mic over to them, and the next voices you hear hopefully will be Jerry and Diane. So hang on just a second, and Jerry and Diane, the mic is all yours.
Thank you, Lynn. Good evening, everyone. Good afternoon, depending on where you are. This is Diane Cirincione Jampolsky, and...
Hi, this is Jerry Jampolsky.
We're really happy to be back on the show. It's been quite a while, and...
I'd like to start with Diane being a prayer in the Course of Miracles that we do before any lecture we give or anyone that we're seeing or meeting with, and it goes like this.
We're here only to be truly helpful. We're here to represent you who sent us.
I do not have to worry about what we're going to say or what we're going to do.
Because you who sent us will direct us.
We're content to be wherever you wish.
Knowing that you're always going there with us.
And we will be healed.
As we let you teach us to heal.
And I'd like to add, help us step aside and let you lead the way.
I can't tell you how many times we have said that healer's prayer. I am sure it is thousands and thousands of times, right? Sometimes we'll say it 2-3 times a day, depending on what's ahead of us. It just really helps us sort of get out of the way.
It's an amazing way of letting go of our ego and stepping aside and letting the Holy Spirit tell us what to think, what to say, and what to do, and to let go of our rational mind and all the fear that comes from listening to the ego voice.
I think most of our listeners know that Jerry and I do the work of attitudinal healing, which is taking the principles of the Course into everyday life and
the
12 of the principles into everyday life and helping people of all different backgrounds, ethnically, culturally, religiously or not, use these principles in a very practical way. So we might talk a little bit about the path of that, Jerry, and how it began.
Well, when we started the center, it was my guidance to have us, people could be able to come there that were atheists, that would not want to look at any words that had to do with God or Holy Spirit or any kind of religious connotation. And so I got the Course and took 12 principles that we thought were really very, very important. And in that way, that the people are very relieved when they come and see that it's not a religious thing, and that we're not using religious words to explain what practical spirituality is all about. And I know that what we do is considered practical spirituality.
And it really helps people heal their relationships with their religious background or their experiences, too. And, of course, people of all faiths and cultures use it also. And Mother Teresa loved it with her sisters. The Dalai Lama said it's the closest thing to Buddhism in action. And really anywhere we go in the world, when we were in Islamic Republic of Iran about 10 years ago, the mullahs, the head of Islamic studies at the university in Tehran, said this work is the core, the very essence of the Quran. So the universality of the Course, everyone is just, as we all know, these are very universal principles, but done in such a way, the Course's brilliant way of redefining it. Just today, Jerry and I do the Course every morning, and we have for 34 years now together. Of course, Jerry did it before then, before he met me. Up to about 39 years ago, almost 40 years ago, and today's lesson was about cause and effect. And really, you know, as you all know, it's amazing how the lessons show up just on the day that we need it. And that, you know, as God being the cause, we being the effect, that love is the only journey between those two, the connectedness, and everything else is, you know, separation. It's just so powerful. It's tools that we use every day in our lives.
I might share how the Course came to me. It was actually introduced to me before it had been published by Judy Scott Whitson. And I asked her, well, what is it about? She said it's about spiritual transformation. It's about God. And I said, Susie, you know, I'm a dedicated atheist. I'm really not interested in that stuff. I appreciate your wanting me to read it, but thank you, but no thank you. And then she asked me a question that I really didn't feel I could get out of it, so why don't you just read one page? And I really didn't see how I could get out of it, and I started to read that page. And for the first time, I heard an inner voice talking to me that said, "Physician, heal thyself. This is your way home. I've been an alcoholic for some time." And that didn't make me stop drinking, but it made me, with that experience, not only the physician, heal thyself, I felt an inner dictation that said, "You're going to do a life of service by making God your will and your will one and the same." Didn't quite know what they were saying, talking about. It struck my heart, and it got me to start to read the lessons. And by golly, I had lessons there with my adult children that I hadn't forgiven, with my ex-wife that I hadn't forgiven, and all of a sudden,
with yourself you hadn't forgiven.
Yeah, and all of a sudden I started to find a sense of inner peace that I never thought that I could ever experience beyond my imagination. And when we started the center, when
1975,
yeah, when the child was dying of cancer and said to the oncologist, "What's it like to die?" And I saw that the oncologist changed the conversation and had the kid about his bowel movements. I became very curious when the first week hospital at University of California in San Francisco, where would kids go, and found out that oftentimes they would go to the cleaning lady in the morning, who would have an honest conversation with them and be honest and on an equal basis. So it was with that in mind that I gathered together about 6, 7 children who were facing death.
And there was no such thing as a support group in those days. We didn't have that model at all. There was only a...
And my guidance was to start a center and groups where there's no choice, because people have cancer. You may have insurance and other things, but quite too expensive. And so my guidance was to believe that and trust that we could train facilitators and we could continue to offer free services, direct services to people with cancer. And then it went to people who had AIDS, and then went to people who had relationship problems and politics and to the music area and to businesses, and began to expand my share.
Well, it's been innovated now and all over the world, and Jerry and I have been invited to work in 60 countries now, and some of them a dozen times. And in 30 countries now, there's independent centers of attitude movement, and we've always encouraged people to take the ideas and innovate them where they are. And in fact, this September 16th through 21st, we have our big 40th anniversary, if you can believe it, Jerry, 40th anniversary of Attitudinal Healing at the beautiful Presidio in San Francisco. The conference is the 19th, 20th, and 21st, and then we've got 25 speakers, and we've got conference workshops and lots of partners supporting it. It's pretty exciting, and it'll be an incredible experience. And our website is www.ah, and then the word international.org, attitudinalhealinginternational.org. For anyone that would like to know, we'd love to have you join us. A lot of Course in Miracles students coming from around the world, people coming from many, many countries. It's pretty exciting. And Carol Howe's going to be there also. Of course, you did the biography of our beloved Bill Thetford. Don't forget to laugh. Carol's doing an all-day workshop. I think it's on the 17th, and she's also a speaker at the main conference, the first speaker.
Somebody at the main
tree. Oh, my gosh. We had Dr. Dean Ornish call recently. He said, "Oh, Jerry, you know, you inspired me at my medical school graduation to do the work that I'm doing. I hear you're having your 40th. I'd love to come out, and I'd love to be able to speak at it." And he said, "Oh, that's wonderful." Gary Zukoff with State of the Soul, Lainey Miller with Finding Right Work, Bryant Welch, Finding Right Love. I mean, pretty exciting. If you go to the website, everything is right there, all the speakers and all the pre-conference. There's 22 pre-conference workshops in the half-day and the full-day format, about so many studies, and many of them are CEU accredited, as well as we're going to have the introduction to attitude healing, as well as introduction to facilitator training. So many people are coming from different places to be able to go back and start their own groups and centers.
Insanity, you mean it?
Yeah, it's a celebration, right? We're having a wonderful dinner and concert, and our honorary co-hosts there are Carlos Santana and Cindy Blackman Santana, who are serious students of A Course in Miracles. In fact, for the last 7 years, every morning, 6 to 7 days a week, at 9 o'clock, Jerry and I and Carlos Santana and Cindy Blackman Santana, Cindy for the last 4 years, do the Course in Miracles. We do the same lesson we do early in the morning, and then we talk about it. We have maybe 20 to 45 minutes every morning. That's our practice, to be together, talk about it. Carlos is, they are amazing students of A Course in Miracles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're going to help us celebrate on the 20th, and that would be an instrument that we're going to talk about. So
right.
Great experiences with the Course in Miracles.
Right, and lots of music that night, too. So we invite lots of folks to join us. So it's amazing how Jerry was guided. Now, I met Jerry in 81, as many of you know, and he started this work in 75, and how he was really guided to do that as an extremely serious student of A Course. He and Judy Stetch, who we're going to have dinner with tomorrow night, Judy Stetch Whitson and Bill, Jerry and Judy took, as I understand, the manuscript, Jerry, right, the first manuscript from Bill and Helen, and took it to Copycat Printers,
mm-hmm.
and bound the first books, which we have some copies of here. But Jerry, you know, I wonder if you would take a minute just to say, before you said you didn't stop drinking when you first got the course, could you share, because a lot of folks, either themselves or they know people that have challenges with that, alcohol. I mean, your journey is a very a beautiful one, and I'd like you to share. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure. At that time in my life, all my relationships had failed. I'd gotten a divorce in 1973 and still had guilt about that. And what happened was that in doing the course, so many things began to change in my life, particularly around guilt, which the Course in Miracles has so much to say about, that having guilt was my comfort zone in my ego.
Did that have anything to do with, do you think guilt has anything to do with alcohol consumption or drug consumption?
Yeah, I think when we are listening to the ego, we're saying to ourselves, you're not worthy of love, you don't deserve to be loved, what you deserve to be is punished. And so the use of alcohol for me was a way of punishing myself and being literally having a slow suicide. And I hadn't started stopping again. I was in trouble, real trouble. And
How much were you drinking at that time?
Probably a couple bottles of wine and maybe a half a bottle of scotch.
A day,
yeah. But, you know, I denied I was an alcoholic because I didn't repeat the day when I did that at night. I would be sober by the time I got to work. Although I was doing the course, I had no problems about continuing drinking. I didn't really feel that it was possible. I mean, I tried many times.
Can you possible to stop drinking?
Yeah, I had many people come to me and try to get me to stop. At times I would stop, but then I knew how to get back to them, and then I would stop drinking again. And so, see, I proved myself they weren't really lovable. They're not giving me unconditional love, so I...
So you created situations
where, in essence, rather than attacking me, I attacked him, but then ended up attacking myself. In that.
Perfect examples of projection and perception. And
there's one statement, of course, projection is a mirror, not a bat.
Perception is a mirror, not a bat.
I think it's around 3 months afterwards, in the middle of the night, I heard a voice calling. It wasn't God's voice, but it was another kind of voice telling me and saying, you need to stop reading now because you're in a new phase of healing. And I got really scared that I was going to see purple elephants on the wall within a few minutes. And just scared me trying to go back to sleep. And the next morning, I had amnesia for anything that happened during the night. And I went to work, and I came back that night and did what I usually do. I go for my scotch bottle, get some eyes, and then go throw it up pretty far to the top. And just as I grabbed the hold of the scotch bottle, I heard that same voice say, "You're in a new phase of healing right now, and this is the time for you to stop drinking.
You no longer need to drink, right?
No longer need to drink." And so it wasn't like a gradual thing. I didn't go to AA or whatever.
You stopped cold turkey then?
I stopped cold turkey.
You never take a drink since then?
And, no, I haven't drank since then. But, and the reason is not out of fear. It's that I wanted to listen to the voice of God. And I felt that in drinking to me, it made me fuzzy. It made me not really clear in terms of what I'm going to hear. And you know, you and I know we're both amateur sculptors, and one of the first sculptures that I did was an angel to remind myself that the innocence that was that I was born with, my DNA was innocence, and the children feel innocence in terms of many of the things that I've done in my life and I'm ashamed about. And wanted to continue to punish myself for it. But I stopped drinking, and I weighed, I think, around 215 pounds then. And I had to take in my clothes, buy new clothes, and went down to weigh 180 during those days. Now I'm down to 165, and I go to the gym 3 times, and I felt 5 to 6 times a week with I am. And, maybe share how I apply attitudinal healing in the course of miracles in my life. I went to the gym under the Diane, and I had trouble seeing because I had glaucoma. Seeing with my physical eyes, I had trouble seeing with my spiritual eyes. My spiritual vision is getting better and better, but my physical vision, my ego vision, is not doing that great. I didn't realize that somebody left the walking machine on rather high, number 4, and I stepped on it, and it just flipped me over in a somersault. I heard it crack, and I just knew that I must have broken my finger, my ankle. And Diane came along, and they got Diane, and I said, "Diane, I just want to do this in a spiritual way. I don't want to do this like getting hangry."
That's why you're lying on the floor. I mean, those people are running around a year ago.
And I could see the manager getting tear in his eyes. I knew he could see it with his eyes. "Oh, God, this guy's going to sue me." And I said, right off the bat, "I want to let you know that no way am I going to sue you." My response being getting up and doing this and all that, but I could have seen how relieved that he was in that. And then, one of the things we like doing is laughing at ourselves. I don't think, reading the course correctly, you read the end of the book most of the time. And I didn't care as pretty much most of the time. And when you go to the gym, sometimes it gets boring, and I'll come up behind Diane when she's on a stationary bike, and I'll kiss her on the cheek, and we get playful, and then vice versa, and she'll do the same to me. And one day I came up to kiss Diane in the back of the cheek, and I found out I was kissing the wrong woman. I got the wrong woman. And I had to laugh at myself, and after she started screaming to calm down, she started laughing too. And I got known as the blind kisser at my gym. But I think it's important to learn to laugh at it and not take ourselves too seriously. I don't take the fact that I'm legally blind. I don't feel like I'm a victim. And I'm quite accepting what is going on, and I found a way that I broke my leg. I couldn't be heavy. They made a mistake in the tube for the anesthesia. They cut off my vocal cord, so I couldn't speak, and they didn't know it was going to be permanent or not. And for 6 weeks, I couldn't speak. And I really learned something. I remember that. I learned that what I have to say is really not that important. What's really important is listening to love.
All right, we get to the point. If this is what it is, we just accepted that. And
you see, and found that I really wasn't talking with clear diction or clear volume. And either me not knowing that, but the vibrations in my voice began to change in a way. So in the morning, when we get up, I read the lessons because I like the vibrations that couple for me, and I read it in big print that has it down white on black.
Right.
And we rotate and bring one paragraph, and the fellows had a flagella as one, and Jimmy's and Diane. And it's a wonderful way of doing it. We do it twice. We do that, and then we pray for 20 minutes and burn the candle that we created, and then we talk about what we experience in our meditation, what we find really helpful and really helpful. And as years gone on, our love for each other and our love for God and the Course made such a difference in my life. It's for Di and I, it's the heartbeat of our life. It's a Course in Miracles. And although we're applying the principles in a different way than the Course mentions, many people who are doing attitude going through the Course, or people get stuck in the place. One of our books, like, I mean, of course, for life. And this is the way to get back in tune again.
Not many people or students of the Course have taught centers for attitude and healing. I believe Helen knew that the Course was going to be shared in many, many different ways, in many cultures, and and in many practices. And on our website, ahinternational.org, on the lower left side, we have the innovations, and people can see so easily how attitudinal healing continues to be innovated out into the world, where people take these principles, the 12 principles, out and apply them to their workplace, to school. We work in schools, we work in prisons. We've never designed it. It's always been so, I think, you know, it's like a celestial scheduler, you might say, plans these things, and we're invited to bring it forth, and we and people from all over the world. So it's pretty exciting. So many people who do attitudinal healing gradually become students of the Course. Many students of the Course gradually come to attitudinal healing, and we just always trust everyone's guidance around that.
Yeah, I think most of the people in the Aspen, Colorado, I just got to say, I think most of those people are students of the Course, and there are many, many churches that are doing the Course in their women have attitude and hearing what's going on.
Right, yeah, well, the center in Colorado, the new center, is the Center for Attitudinal Healing, Roaring Fork Valley, located at the Aspen Chapel. It's a very exciting new center, we do at Attitudinal Healing International, and Terry and I are at the international headquarters here in Sausalito, and we have a fabulous, wonderful staff, and we support people who are interested in starting groups or centers or already have centers, and helping the centers mature. We mentor them. We help them with trainings, things like that, and as you go on the site, you can see right there if someone wants to find a group or a place to go to, they can just go on the site. Well, or contact us or call us.
You're going fast, someone wants to find out where the centers are. Where did they go on the website?
On the website, under, it says centers at the top, and then you'll see the locations in the different countries, etc. And then there's two places just below that where it says if you want to find a group or if you want to start a group, if you want to find a center or you want to start a center. And you just click it on, and it comes right into us, and we have a wonderful staff. And Trish Ellis is our international communications coordinator. She's been with us 28 years. Just took a hiatus a few years ago to run the Dalai Lama's organization here in the United States in Bloomington for one of the Rinpoches, and now she's back with us full time.
And there are a number of podcasts that we've interviewed many of the centers.
So they're all on iTunes.
And I think you can find that interesting.
Under media and podcasts.
Under media, there are many things that we've done and interviewed other people on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we have a YouTube channel with lots of videos,
yeah,
right?
We have some of the children called Jerry the Cat.
Guess who that is? We also have attitudinal healing moments, which we're doing.
Yeah. I don't think you quite mentioned some of the different centers that we should how far away they are. South Mongolia, Outer Mongolia, Japan, is what, 14 groups then?
20 cities.
20 cities. Mexico.
There's 6 centers in Mexico in 29 cities.
There are children's groups in Nigeria, in Ghana, West Africa.
Cameroon.
Cameroon.
We have a K through, actually, for first grade through 12th grade programs called The Power to Choose, which is taking these principles into schools. We have full curriculums. One of the centers works in India with girls in Surat, in the slums. Fabulously successful program.
The Netherlands has like 60 cities, I think, now.
Right, the Netherlands, I think, is our biggest center, and that's located in 60 cities. We have different models. You know, there's a model like the original center, which was a building, and everybody came there. That center has merged into having all the groups in the community, 12 groups in the local community. Then there's places like Guadalajara that are both a building as well as they're in the local prisons and hospitals. They work with violence and kidnapping and families whose children whose parents have been murdered in front of them, women who are widows, etc. Amazing work. The Oakland Center, which is 25 years old this year, Ayusha and Kokomon Klote, who will be featured at the conference. Oh, absolutely, yes. And their center does incredible programs with youth in the community as well as the Housing Authority. Anyone on HUD money by the Open Housing Authority is mandated to go to a 4-hour class on attitudinal healing. And then they have a choice if they want to go a 12-week course, which is free to them, of course. All our services, all the support services are free. And trainings are very nominal, and of course, if someone can't afford it, we certainly would never turn anyone away. But that program is fantastic. It's changed lives.
So they learn the value of changing their mind and the value of how important the value of the community is, not moving on to great pieces. And why don't we pause at this moment and ask Lynn if you have any questions you want to ask us, or if any of the people that are listening might have any questions they would like to ask us. Are you there, Lynn?
Len, there's no mic. Len, there's no mic. Are you there?
Hello. Yes, Jerry and Diane here. Hello. Is someone trying to ask a question? But we'll just continue telling the story, and if someone does, just kind of go ahead and break in. A man named Tasha Abdu.
Yes, and he got addicted to drugs, and his wife and two children left, and 10 days went apart. One day he was taking a walk on a Sunday. And
he said he was derelict.
And he had a few pennies in his pocket and saw a cart with a donkey in front of it with old books. And he saw something called Love is Letting Go of Fear, which I had written. And he bought that, and it became like a Bible for him. He did the lessons every day, about 4 or 5 months. And he started to heal himself and wanted to start a center because he thought the people in Cameroon were suffering from physical abuse, wives were suffering from physical abuse, all kinds of problems, drug abuse. And we couldn't get him over here.
I might interject, Jerry, that he then got back with his wife and his children, got a residence for them, started a clinic for her. She's a nurse. And then he contacted us and wanted to start a center, so we tried to bring him over for training, as you were starting to say.
Then Els and her friend came over to the Netherlands and did this.
And they went through a major training there, and we mentored him, et cetera. Long story short, started a center there, and I became a student of A Course in Miracles. And we told him the origin of the work, and as a serious student of A Course. And he started working with people who had disabilities, training facilitators, and then heard about the youth program, and they started the Power to Choose program. And one of the big high schools there was 6,000 students. And did it for the whole semester, and life-changing things happened. They never had any policies around bullying or anything like that, and the word wasn't even used, but it was happening. And the students were so empowered, they, along with the, went to the administration and started a bullying campaign, et cetera, and the principal was so impressed by the students and the program that he had them do presentations in front of the entire school, and that program's continuing now. Tasha's training the facilitators as well as teachers and students from the first class that are now 45 students. A number of them are going to be co-facilitators, you might say. So it just keeps working on and on. And that's really, centers all evolve in their own unique ways. And as Jerry said on the ahinternational.org website under media, the podcast is a whole section of them that are how people came to start centers. And every one is just an amazing story of people's people finding their way. Their way to do this work in the world.
So we're learning another way of looking at the world, as the course would say, is doing our very best not to have a motivation to change other people or to change other people's attitudes, but to focus on making inner peace of God our only goal, to make forgiveness our only function, and to learn to let go of the past and let go of the future and live in the present of love. As Diane mentioned, our lesson today was reminding ourselves that when we're listening to the ego, we'll start to blame other people or other things.
Or blame body.
Or blame God. So we're learning to take responsibility for our thoughts, and that our thoughts really create our reality, and that reminding ourselves that no matter what the problem is, love can heal that.
That love is always the answer.
Love is always the answer, and that we do our best to live our lives as vehicles of unconditional love and forgiveness and forgiving ourselves. So, Lynn, I'm going to ask once again, are you there now? Hello? If not, we're going to say so long for now. And,
all right, yeah, I am here. Can you hear me? And, yeah, if there are any questions that anybody has, please put up your hand or write them on the board, and I'll be happy to turn the mic over to Jerry and Diane. I've been really enjoying this. I did have a problem that, you know, my computer locked up and dropped everything, so I was asking people help. Somebody take the mic and tell them we can hear you, because I was not able to talk to you. But believe it or not, I didn't panic or get upset. I just said, "Hey, I need help here," and I'm supposing the Holy Spirit is in charge of this, because I certainly am not. But Jerry and Diane, I heard you say that someone has started an attitudinal healing facility or thing here in Colorado, and that's something I was really hoping or thinking about doing, coming to your training, learning how to do it, and to facilitate it, and maybe starting a center around my area, which is in southeastern Colorado. We're just above the New Mexico border. But one thing I wanted to mention to you is that there are several of us here who have either been through, worked with Diedrich or worked with other attitudinal healing groups, circles, and we're actually wanting to start doing some circles here on Awakening Together Radio. And so I'm thinking that maybe in August we may be doing that. But for those folks who haven't been exposed to your process, could you talk a little bit more about what the process is and how it is that you work with people on getting rid of their unresolved or unrecognized guilt? And I'm going to let go of the mic and turn it back to you.
Well, thank you, Lynn. Let me interject that also in the Roaring Fork Valley, which Aspen is a part, the center there is located at the Aspen Chapel. And I wanted to let you know, Lynn, that all those folks have founded it. A number of them are coming. I think there's four or five of them, maybe six, that are coming to the full conference points that you were talking about coming to. So that'd be very exciting for you to meet with them, and you know, there's all sorts of wonderful mentoring going on. And they started, you know, they had a community meeting. Oftentimes, we or someone will go there and you know, talk about attitude and healing. We've been in that area many times, so a lot of people knew the work. And they decided that they wanted to have a center in their valley, which is a large, you know, it takes you an hour to drive through it. There were all sorts of folks that, I mean, had problems with suicide, with divorce, with violence, all sorts of things that come up in everyday life. And they knew that they were able to use attitude and healing as a way of healing themselves. And so, and some, many of them, of course, students of A Course in Miracles. And they wanted a practical way to actually do this. And so they then had a big community meeting and talked about starting their center. Most of them, they've got to become 501c3s. They don't have to, but that's usually what happens when they become a center. To be a center, you have to have at least, you know, two or more support groups and be able to offer training. So they you don't have to do it yourselves. You can bring in someone else to do the training. And then they started out actually with four groups right away, and they had about 60 people as their core group, which is quite sturdy and excellent. And they have they've been mentored. They have a couple of folks mentoring them, and they're all coming out to the training. So people can actually start groups, which are usually run about 2 hours. And they can start it without having started a center. A lot of them use the mini course for life. All this is available on Amazon as well as on our website from the bookstore. Although you teach only love, we'll start with the mini course, and they, which is all, you recognize all of the principles from A Course in Miracles. And, they practice by first, you know, basically a group is, this is the very first peer support group that was ever created 40 years ago. And they will, you know, hold hands in silence, and then afterwards read the principles, go around, everyone reads one, and then the guidelines for group, which are really quite excellent. They're all located on the website. You just go, all that's available there, all downloadable. And then, really, there's a facilitator, and there's usually a couple of facilitators. And, you know, I say the sign of an excellent facilitator is one who never has to say a word throughout the whole time. That really the group facilitates itself. The facilitator is there to keep the group safe and to not to give advice. This isn't a therapy group, so every day people can be trained as facilitators. We always suggest people to leave their PhDs and their MDs and everything else outside the door. And we all come as equal students and teachers to each other. And then, what, Jerry? Right, the pre-conference workshops on September 16th is the introduction to attitudinal healing, and the 17th and 18th is introduction to being a facilitator, and that's at the beautiful Presidio in San Francisco. The conference will sell out, so if anyone's remotely interested, you should go on the website right away and check it out. You'll see all the speakers and the interactions. It's pretty exciting. And also, if someone's thinking of coming to San Francisco in September, you know, hotel rooms sell out, cars sell out. It's the most popular month of the year. So but we invite folks to explore further. So then that's pretty much the idea of the support group. And then, you know, we have always found it a very organic process. The first group is people that want to create the center have their own group. We at Attitudinal Healing International at our headquarters, every Tuesday, the first hour and 15 minutes we have our business meeting, and then we hold hands and we do our support group ourselves. Jerry, myself, our staff, and it is really just transformative. We are so close and so caring for each other. We don't have any of the traditional things that go on in offices that are negative, and everybody's there to help each other. We care deeply about each other. We use the principles that we share with others in our own work together. And so that's pretty exciting. Are there any other questions about that?
What are other things?
Okay, so if anybody has any questions, please either raise your hand or you can write them on the board. And someone who's here in the room, Katie Alice, who is a friend of ours in New Zealand, and she actually came to A Course in Miracles from reading your book, your work, Jerry. So you guys, I know you don't know the impact, the really thousands of people's lives that, you'll never know in this world, but you will always know in truth. Because we're joined as one. We are one. And the book was Love is Letting Go of Fear. And we know that was really pivotal to a lot of people's growth. Does anybody else have any other questions for Jerry and Diane? I do intend to go to the pre-conference workshops and the conference as well. So how I'm going to get there and what's going to happen to make that happen, I don't know. But I never know anything, and I always get exactly what I need, so it's perfect. Bill Free or Lisa Natoli, one or the other of them, is asking, what is your best advice for new Course in Miracles students? First-year students, do you have any kind of good advice for first-year Course in Miracles students? And I'm going to let go of the mic and give you guys back the mic. I think.
This comes from learning to listen to an inner voice in our heart about where to start. Some people start, at the very beginning of the text and then go to the teacher's manual and then go to the workbook. I'm dyslexic, and the lesson seemed more attractive to me than the other parts of it. And so
the workbook is how you started.
And then I started with the workbook.
And I started with the text.
But I think it's an individual thing, and if we trust to listen to our heart to get our answers, rather than the ego mind, which is always coming from fear, we tend to get the correct answers that are going to be helpful for us. That would be my response. I know
Diane
would be another way.
Well, I think I appreciate that, Jerry, too, and I support everything you just said. I would add to it, Lisa, that over the last 34 years of being involved with folks starting with the course, including myself, et cetera, sometimes some folks think that they know the right way to interpret it, but I think part of the experience of A Course in Miracles is that it's a self-taught program, and I think it can be shared in groups. I mean, nothing in the course says that it's done in groups, but I believe that Jerry and Bill Thetford got together and would meet in the mornings to talk about the course. That's actually the first idea of a group that ever started, and then other people joined them just to kind of like talk about it, etc. I haven't been a group person myself, so you can hear from the differences even in our experiences that it really just, whatever speaks to you, but always, always is go inside and ask yourself what is true for you. This is a journey about remembering and forgetting, remembering who we are and who we're not. And it's an exciting, wonderful journey. It's not a race. There's one thing I love, one of the many things I love in the course. It says, the curriculum is not, you're going to do the curriculum one way or another. It's only the time you take to do it that's optional. And that's really great, because everybody's on a different page, and there are many pages of it. Or some people haven't even discovered it, or they find it culturally through another tradition. It's just have confidence in yourself and your connectedness with spirit, what we call your spiritual DNA, your natural right to be happy. And whenever you're not experiencing that, ask yourself, do I really believe I deserve the right to be happy? Because A Course in Miracles, if it teaches us anything, it teaches us that we do not need to suffer in order to learn and to grow.
I think the thing that most people are aware of is a sliding sense for belonging, to be interconnected with each other, to heal the illusion of separation, and to have inner peace. And if inner peace becomes a vigorous goal for you, and forgiveness, you're able to see the value of that, then I think that gives you more motivation for going through the course. And if things get difficult or you don't understand it, still move on and don't let something...
But if you get stuck on a page, just tear it out. He had, like, no attachment to somebody doing the course. I love that about Bill. I didn't know Helen. Jerry knew Helen. And Bill had a great sense of humor. And he just was a beautiful, beautiful soul. And I'll never forget that. And also, you know, I asked him myself, and this is back in, oh, gosh, sometime in the 80s, I said, you know, Bill, I have a real problem with the whole gender thing, the male thing, the he, the God, the father part. You know, I said, I was raised in theology and Catholicism, et cetera, and I love that. I feel like I really evolved out of thinking of God or the deity or this universal spirit in terms of gender terms. And you know what Bill said? He said, just change it. Change it to whatever you want. I go, really? He said, yeah. He said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. He said, remember, these are all cultural adaptations. And if that doesn't speak to you, just change it. I said, because it felt limiting to me. And I really loved that about Bill. And so from that, I have shared that with many folks, many people, both men and women, mostly women, who have had a challenge with that. And so I offer that to students who have that same kind of challenge, you know, with the language.
You know, there's a thing we've been doing for a few years. It's called A Way of Starting the Morning. And,
A Way of Starting the Day, yeah.
Day. And we used to have a long to-do list, which you never seem to be able to finish. And you end up feeling guilty about it. And you were asking some help and guidance from our higher power. And said, well, why don't you write it to...
Jerry and Diane?
All right, yeah, I lost you guys, so I'm going to let go of the mic. And Bill Free is saying, Lisa and I will be seeing you in Irvine, and they're looking forward to it. And Kathy Scott Perry said that Jerry, I think this is Kathy Scott Perry, Kathy Zigo, Jerry Jampolsky, Judith and Robert Sketch, and Bill Thetford introduced me to the course in April of 1978. And Laurel Eden is saying, I admit it is easier for me to say I'm a daughter of God, even though I know my spirit has no gender. And I just want to say thank you to Diane and Jerry for being here. So great to listen to you. And actually, Laurel Eden, who wrote that, actually has been reading from your book every Thursday when she comes in the room and teaches. So you have a lot of fans here and people who really love you. So I'm going to turn back the mic, and someone says, oh, my God, my spirit has no gender. Oh, my goodness. All right, I'm going to turn back the mic to you guys, and, you know, you might want to make some closing remarks Bill says that they will be interviewing you. Bill Free and Lisa Natoli are coming to Irvine to interview you. You must already know about that. So right now I'm going to let go of the mic and turn it back over to you.
I knew your name was familiar. I was trying to think of where. Yes, of course. And we are so looking forward to that. And we want to remind everyone down in Irvine, we're getting there on the 8th, and I think we're seeing you that afternoon on the 9th and 10th of August. But the whole conference goes on for 2 days, and with Miracle Distribution, those beautiful, beautiful souls, Beth Hutchison, Darren, the Tess, the whole group, who really have made the Course in Miracles so accessible, and so many related materials for Marianne Williamson, ourselves, etc., and so many. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that, Lisa. I just wanted to finish the comment about the to-be list on our website, ahinternational.org. It's a huge site. Under media and under downloads, the to-be list is there, and we invite everyone to do that. And if you'd like information on starting the day, go ahead and just send, you can click on the website onto our, and email us at info@ahinternational.org, and we'll make sure that it's sent to you. And Jerry, do you want to have any closing remarks today? This is always such a pleasure being with, you can just feel the energy of the course students that are with us. We're all students together.
It's always a pleasure to talk to people who want to find another way of looking at the world. And as we come to support each other in the trials and tribulations that we seem to have in life, and find another way of finding peace of mind by realizing that everything is an illusion out there that comes from the eyes and the ears, and it's the invisible that is our truth, because truth is something that never changes. God bless you all, and know how much we love you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add on to something my 94-year-old mother says often, that it should have become a little cradle for us. She says, honey, you know what? In the end, it doesn't really matter. So Jerry and I have our motto. We used to be let go and let God. And now our motto is let go, let God, and lighten up. May you have lots of joy and happiness and laughter in your days.
And another thing that Di's mother has mentioned, that she's having a lot of memory difficulties, and she's being able to turn things around very right away. So she said, you know, losing your memory isn't all that bad. I no longer can remember what I'm upset about.
I tell her, Mom, you know, all of us study all these years, we do all these spiritual traditions just to get exactly where you are. You forget all your grievances, you're forgiven everybody, and you know that it doesn't really, really matter. And I guess maybe we can end, Jerry, with our dear friend Hugh Prather, who's not on this plane anymore, his favorite song. Why don't we sing it together?
Roll, roll, roll your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.